Hi, this is my favourite Elliott Smith song. If you haven't listened to us before, in this podcast, we try, in our own very small way, to keep Elliott Smith's legacy alive by speaking to well-known fans about their favourite song of his. And it's been quite an important week for the Elliott Smith fan base the world over, because on Tuesday, August the 6th, it would have been his 50th birthday. To mark the occasion, people have been holding tribute shows in a variety of different cities, in places such as Brighton, Boston, New York, Edinburgh, and we also hosted one here in London too. We'll have a bit more about a couple of those tribute shows later on, but first, as is now tradition, let's hear from our guest. Talking us through her favourite Elliott Smith song, and much more besides, today it's Margaret Cho. Margaret is good at pretty much everything, it seems. She's a successful comedian, writer, actress and musician. So you may have seen her in films such as It's My Party and Face Off, in TV shows like 30 Rock and Drop Dead Diva, or you may know her from her successful stand-up and music ventures. And as well as being very talented, Margaret is also a huge Elliott Smith fan. This really came to light immediately following his death in 2003, when she posted a very emotional and heartfelt blog on her website on what Elliott meant to her. So in this interview, we talk about that article, how that led her to connect with Elliott's family, and we also cover her favourite song pick too. So here we go then. Here's Margaret Cho.
My name is Margaret Cho. I'm a stand-up comedian, and I'm also an artist and activist. I'm a singer-songwriter as well, and a podcaster as of relatively recently. So lots of different things. It is Sweet Adeline, and I was surprised that this hadn't been done yet. This song is incredible, and it's actually also a fan site. A lot of people were posting to Sweet Adeline after Elliott died, and it's a great song. And if you had to pick one out of his incredible songbook, it's hard to pick, but this one is really extraordinary.
Cut this picture into you and me.
What it does, I mean, if outside of the lyrics or anything, if you just look at the way the song is structured, and this is like when you really see like a songwriter goes beyond what is expected. Of course, we think songs are supposed to be melodic and pleasing to the ear, but there's some songs that really take you by surprise. And here, when it's sort of like it bursts into this crazy chorus that soars. And, very few songwriters I know in the world have accomplished this. I would say somebody maybe like Harry Nilsson is one, maybe Nick Drake, also Fiona Apple does it. Amanda Palmer does it. There's a few people in the world that are capable of this, but it's something that like you go, oh, well, this person really understands music differently, uses chords differently and structure. But that's the thing is like when it sends you into the chorus where it's seems like it's his voice layered, but it's just one of those songs that I think is really extraordinary. I get that like when that Salieri feeling, like Salieri, the very bitter rival to Mozart, when he hears things that Mozart does and he's just like, I could never do that. This is the song that does that for me. What's great about Elliott Smith's songwriting and that lyrically, it can be taken a million different ways. Like it doesn't have to be so literal. Like some songs I believe are kind of literal, like something like, Say Night's Heaven or Between the Bars, that are very much about a kind of oblivion in substance addiction and alcohol. Those songs are, to me, are very literal. But this one, you can kind of take it and you're not really bound to what was lyrically there. It can be the song about longing and regret or walking away or maybe something that's passing that you know you wanted to hang on to. It's really left up to the listener, you know, and that's always my favorite kind of lyrics, is when you're not bound to what's there in such a very literal fashion.
There's a kid on the floor below me saying, brother, can you spare sunshine for a brother? Old man, winter's in the air. Walk me up a story, asking how you are. Told me not to worry, you were just a shooting star.
This song has some kind of roots in that sort of traditional Americana, like the kind of a centuries old songbook of like old folk songs, which I think a lot of his music too, that reminds me of. There's like a real link to things like murder ballads and sort of very sinister lyrics of old timey songs. Even like the dark patterns that are found in Grimm's fairy tales, a lot of the myth and legend that we have now that sort of emerged from dark sources. But I think this one, yeah, it references old timey things like, can you spare a dime? Can you spare sunshine? Old man winter. It's like, it's a kind of like, it's the song that an old soul would sing.
One line that's always sticks out to me when I think about that, the song, is at the end when he talks about deaf and dumb and done. And it seems very powerful.
Yes. There's a little bit of like an intersection with King's Crossing, where give me one reason why I shouldn't do it, you know, and this sort of thing of like, why not? You know, like I am setting maybe the listener up for the fact that I am preparing for my own death, and that it's an eventuality that's going to happen, whether it's, you know, how it did happen, or how, you know, it's sort of maybe a metaphysical death, a kind of a metaphorical death. But it's all about sort of self-destruction, like I'm going to sedate myself into this and it's going to be the end. So it's one of those things that, you know, you see it like kind of crossover in other songs there.
Sweet Adam.
It's the song that kicks off XO. What do you make of it as an album opener?
Well, I think it's great because it's like XO marks a real significant change in the way that Elliot kind of worked as an artist. I think that XO was really kind of where he really took charge of everything, you know, and you can really hear that. It's I think the album that most people connect with kind of right away. And it's certainly like, it's kind of like that sort of the entry point for a lot of fans. And this song, it kind of blows your mind. It's like, oh, this is different than anything happening. You know, of course, around the same time, we had a lot of sort of grunge from the Pacific Northwest. And we were looking to, Seattle and Portland and looking at their music and thinking of it as being very innovative. But to me, that music is innovative, but it's so much of a dirge, you know, like in Nirvana, you have, it's sort of almost like a monastic dirge that these deep, dark chords, these drop D tunings that kind of persist over and over and over. And, maybe Sweet Adeline starts like this, maybe XO starts like that, but it blasts it out beyond your expectations, which is what I think I expect from a genius, is to be something beyond my expectations. And, you know, this song is a perfect example of that.
Did that happen to you when you first listened to this song and the album XO?
I think that I was just, you know, arrested. Like it arrested my sensibilities. I mean, I had been a fan of Heat Miser before this, and then I, and I had known of his, you know, just his presence. He was around. I was in Los Angeles, and he was doing a lot of shows at Largo, which is a very legendary club in LA. And he had been working with John Bryan, who is an amazing producer, and John actually worked on a lot of different tracks with him. John is also an incredible multi-instrumentalist and really listens with a higher ear. Like his ears are attuned to a higher vibration, much like Elliott Smith's. And so, you know, he was around, Elliott Smith was around. So I was very much aware of him, almost in our peer group as friends. I never met him, but he was around. He wasn't the most approachable guy. He was incredibly shy, incredibly, I think, kind of almost embarrassed to be himself, you know, because he was somebody that everybody regarded with such a kind of like honor. There was this aura around him of this very special being, because at Largo, people with that kind of exceptional musical talent are really, they're like gods on earth. And so I think he was quite embarrassed by that people would kind of freak out over him. And he was really not that kind of individual. He was not set up to be a celebrity. He did not enjoy that kind of spotlight. I think he enjoyed that people loved his music, but they didn't really understand that somebody like him, you know, he creates this music, but he doesn't necessarily do it to be applauded or revered as he was.
You wrote a blog the day after he died where you talk about the fact that you had seen him around in LA and I think in New York as well, you mentioned in the piece, and you were kind of reluctant to go and speak to him.
Yeah, because you kind of just, you wanted him to be safe in a way. Like I wanted to kind of relate to his music and feel like I didn't want to interfere with whatever that process was, because he just looked really uncomfortable to be, you know, in that kind of a setting, in that arena where people were fawning all over him. And he just, you know, I you want to respect that, but at the same time, it's also scary to approach people like that. Like you want to say something, but you really can't, you know, you just have to be a fan in the right way. But I wrote that blog entry. This is like in the infancy of blogging and the internet, you know, as we see it. And so it got picked up by a lot of fans, and it got over to Elliott's family and his producer over there, you know, and they invited me to his memorial service. And from there, I went over to his home, and I was there with Jennifer Chibat. And we were playing his music and talking about him. And, you know, I ended up bringing a lot of food over there, magazines over there, just kind of to help her out of her intense shock and grieving. I mean, as I couldn't even imagine what that whole situation must have been like. You really see how loved he was. And so I made a book that had some artwork and some of the things from the blog people had written in, and I printed everything out and I presented the book to Ashley, his sister. So the family has it. You know, it's something that like you sort of witness these things in history, you're sort of a bystander, and it's pretty incredible to have been just around his whole crew at that time. And you really saw how much people adored him.
I just want to go back to that article. It's very kind of emotionally driven. And you say things like he made everything better. And I just wanted to ask whether your feelings now are kind of the same as they were back then when you wrote it, or have things changed? And if so, how have they changed?
I think that they haven't changed. He does make everything better. I mean, his music, what is really wonderful is that he left behind so much great music. And of course we want more, but you know, the fact that that is like a finite thing is the saddest part, but he did leave a good amount of material that we can still always enjoy. Like it's just something that is consistently on in sort of my rotation of music that I love. And, you know, it's sad when you see And we see this time and time again. Almost every generation has its martyrs, people who are so talented, the artists that are just so brilliant, yet are too, they're almost like they're too good for this world. And it happens time and time again. And then you see like that there's people that, you know, maybe they just came so that they could create this and that we could have it. And, you know, that's the best way that I can think about it. It's really tragic. And it's something that, you know, it still affects me. It's still very, very sad.
And before we finish the interview, Margaret just wanted to mention one more thing.
I want to say, you know, that my favorite cover of all time of anything is Elliott Smith's cover of Trouble, which is, of course, a very famous Cat Stevens Yusuf song. I covered Elliott's cover of Trouble in February because, unfortunately, my best friend of 40 years died very sadly of a drug overdose. And so I was trying to think what the best thing I could do to honor her memory. And that was actually covering Cat Stevens in a song that she loved so much, which was Trouble.
Thank you then to Margaret Cho for speaking to us on my favorite Elliott Smith song. And I should also say thanks to podcast listener Beth Chaplow for recommending Margaret to us. And if you've got any suggestions for future guests, then do feel free to get in touch with us. Our email is info@myfavoriteelliottsmithsong.com, or you can contact us on social media or through our website. Now, from Margaret, we go to a couple of tribute shows held here in the UK on what would have been Elliott Smith's 50th birthday, Tuesday the 6th of August. Shortly, we'll hear from Mark Benton about a great event he organised in Brighton. But first, we'll focus quickly on the tribute show we co-hosted in London with the musician Dan Caleb. It was an amazing evening. We had a great lineup of local musicians, podcast listeners, and a couple of our previous guests too. Benjamin Langford Biss from As It Is and Max Bloom from Yuck. It was all for the charity Help Musicians UK, and I'm pleased to say that we raised nearly £1,400 through ticket sales and our Elliott Smith themed raffle. So thank you to everyone who contributed. And after they played their set, I caught up with our old friends Max Bloom and Ben Langford Biss.
Hi, I'm Ben Langford Biss. I've been on this podcast before, and I just played at the Tribute Night in London. It was my first time ever playing on my own. It was my first time ever covering Elliott songs, and I was scared shitless. I was so nervous, but honestly, like, it's the same as when I get nervous for like a big show. The moment you're kind of like in a few like bars, it kind of eases away, and I just managed to enjoy it. And like you said earlier, like, people were singing along, so that was nice. It was just really nice to be in a room full of fellow Elliott fans.
Hello, I am Max Bloom from the band Yuck, and a previous guest on my favourite Elliott Smith song. It was quite amazing. Like, the atmosphere tonight made it... I didn't feel nervous as soon as I got on stage. And I think it's because, obviously, there's so many Elliott Smith fans in one room, and it was like a very positive atmosphere, and there was no judgment at all. But also, there were so many different types of music fans, and it kind of made me realise how universal Elliott Smith is.
Thanks very much to Louise for letting us use that recording of Ben playing Say Yes. And from London, we now head south to Brighton and to Mark Benton, who also organised a tribute show on the 6th.
Oh, Well, I organised a tribute show at a local venue called The Pipeline here. It's fairly small. It only holds about 70 people, but it was lovely and intimate. And we raised a good amount of money for a local charity called Grassroots, a suicide prevention charity. It was incredible, really. It took a long time to organise. We had, including my own band, there was 15 acts in total. There was such a wonderful community spirit in the room, and I was just blown away by how diverse all the acts were. It was lovely to hear, you know, people's own interpretations. I think that's something, yeah, that I wanted to get across, really. Not only was it a wonderful experience to raise money for a good cause, the thing that always interests me is when you have a wide range of musicians, but each having their own sort of personal spin on each of their favourite Elliot songs. That always, yeah, I find really exciting and intriguing.
Thanks very much to Mark for updating us on his show there. And there are more shows scheduled to take place after we put out this episode on the 8th of August. There's another one in London, there's one in Boston, and there are other upcoming shows in New York and Edinburgh too. Plus, I'm sure there are plenty more around the world we don't know about. For us, hearing about all these gigs taking place, it really shows that Elliot's legacy is very much still alive all around the world. He may be missed a lot, but he's certainly not being forgotten. And that's pretty much it for this episode. Thanks to all our guests. Thank you to Margaret Cho, to Max Bloom, Ben Langford-Biss and Mark Benton. Thanks also to Elizabeth Wood-Stanley for producing this show with me. And thank you very much for listening to it and keeping Elliot Smith's legacy alive too. To play us out today, here's Dan Caleb, who co-hosted the tribute show with Elizabeth and me in London. Dan is a very talented musician, so do go out and check his work out after you hear him telling us about his favourite Elliot Smith song, True Love. See you soon.
I couldn't possibly choose a favourite Elliot Smith song, so I'm going a slightly different route and I'm going to suggest a song that had the most powerful effect on me. It was a song called True Love. Hearing those words when I was struggling myself with depression, and I knew that Elliot, who had obviously passed away by that point, had many, many thoughts of suicide and may have ended up killing himself, and there was something deeply emotional hearing those words. He wrote the song, I believe, towards the end of his life, and the final refrain from the song is, "Take me up, my Lord, take me out of this place." And I was really struggling at the time. To hear words like that was very, very powerful. There's something about hearing music, hearing a song like that that connects with you. It's just indescribable. And I think it's very important. There's something very cathartic about hearing something that resonates through you. And that's what that song did for me. It's what a lot of Elliot Smith's songs did for me. It actually makes it very difficult for me to listen to Elliot now. But I still see him as the greatest songwriter that there ever was.